This is Phil Farron. And I am driving home Thursday. Today, it is episode 591, I think. 591. All is well. Been a good week at work. We got a lot of good stuff done. Moving forward on the projects. Got some things deployed. Got like that, like that, like that. Figured out what we were doing. Wait. Maybe we deployed last week. It all runs together after a while. Family is good. Writing is good. Like I said last week, I think I know my way out of book 13. So I think I'm good there. Just getting it written now. And getting it written while I'm working on costumes as well. So this week I've been working on International Cat Day. And I thought I knew what I was doing for it. And then I got a little farther into it. And I thought, oh, I could do this. Oh, I could do that. Oh, I could do that. Which I got to stop doing that and just getting hunkered down and just get done what I need to get done on it. International Cat Day is not tomorrow or the next week, but the next week. So, you know, I've got time, but beyond that, I do have some stuff to do for International Cat Day Part 2, which is the next week, and then the next week is International Dog Day, and I've got the costume for that, so we're good. And then the next week, I think, is actually Labor Day weekend. And I really wasn't sure what I was going to do for Labor Day weekend, but I've got an idea now, and that's going to take some work. So basically, I've got to get International Cat Day pretty much knocked out and done this weekend. So if I can get that done, then that's going to... I've got a little bit I can do for International Cat Day Part 2. I've got some goggles I have to make, but that's not going to be too bad. But the internet, but Labor Day is gonna, that's gonna be involved. But I don't quite have all the pieces in yet anyways for it. So I got a little time setting it up, knocking them down, you know? I had a nice note from someone today on Facebook because I had tried for a while just to accept all friend requests. That didn't work out so good. I got over into some other countries for the world, and oh, I started getting, and I know this is not much when it comes to what some people get, but I was getting dozens of new friend requests a day. They were all coming from overseas, most of them coming from Africa, and then they would quickly devolve into send me money. So finally, I had to give that up. I just like, oh, this is taking too much time, too much time, too much time. So... anyways, sadness. So that's all fine. Writing is good. Days are good. Costumes are good. It's going to be fun tomorrow. It's going to be fun tomorrow. It's National Bagpipe Appreciation Day tomorrow, so it's going to be fun. I've already been asked once, so you are wearing leggings, right? And I said, yes, we're not going... I didn't say this to her, but... not going commando under a kilt. That is not happening. But I do have an outfit with a kilt, so it'll be fine. There's really not much difference between a kilt and a Catholic schoolgirl outfit. But, you know, it is what it is. So it'll be fun. I think it'll be fun. It'll be fun. So I do have, you know, a couple of outfits like that that just give me a little more time between where I have time to build new stuff. So I'm really hoping I get the Cat in the Hat, the International Cat Day stuff working, because that'll be a lot of fun if I can get that working. I'm working on it. Anyways, today I was going to go off on a different topic, but I have had a few interesting thoughts over the last few days, and I thought, you know, maybe I should just do one more podcast that's tangentially related to all the stuff that's going on in the country right now. Just in the interest of balancing, Because part of the reason that I do these is not only just to ramble on about what I'm thinking, but it's also to document for myself where I was at in terms of thought processes and convictions and ideas, because people have a tendency to change over time, change somewhat dramatically. But I, like everyone else, have had the idea that, you know, by the time I got into my, well, it would have been my 40s, because it was early, no, my mid-30s, because it was around 1990, which I would have been 32 at that point, is when I was running along the road and I was complaining about not understanding the flesh, and isn't the flesh at least somewhat self-protective, because I had a friend who was just really self-destructive. And I was grousing to God and saying, I just don't understand. I just don't get the flesh. It doesn't make any sense what it's doing in this guy's life, because it's going to drive him downward until he destroys himself. And isn't the flesh at least somewhat self-protective? And it was at that point, when I was out for a little jog, I clearly remember, you know, I was just getting ready to start the jog, moving down towards the first tiny little hill, and I felt like the Holy Spirit spoke to me and said, it makes perfect sense when you understand his flesh hates him. And that was a revelation. And that really started me on my course. And that was a big turn. That was a big turn. I had things that could get me on the right path to making good decisions. Things like, why don't I just act like the Bible is true? That wasn't bad. That got me a fur piece down the road. But the idea of the flesh as a tyrant, and that anything that it suggested was leading to my destruction, and that anything the Spirit suggested was leading to my success and prosperity and life and health and all the good stuff, spiritual health. That idea was fundamental and profound, and it made a huge difference. And part of the reason that I do all these podcasts is maybe at some point I'll go back and listen to the early ones. Because I have a sneaking suspicion that once I got that piece, I think I've been fairly consistent with using that as a foundation and building everything off of that. And so, and I've never found that to fail me. That there's always a way to take what I've learned and any new thing I've learned and plug that in. It's primal, it's foundational, it's atomic. It is, in my mind, a priori. You know, this is what the Apostle Paul said, and we can take it as a starting point. We don't build up to it from evidence and say, oh, there's the evidence. It is the starting point. It is the foundation, that there are two forces at work within you. There is the flesh and the spirit. You can call it other things like our better angels or our inner demons or the yin and the yang or good wolf and bad wolf or, you know, whatever. You can call it whatever you like, but this fundamental conflict within us and how we relate to that conflict sets the tone of our lives. And so, part of the reason that I've done all this is because I think it's interesting to have this on record and be able to go back later and say, that's what I said then. Do I still agree with that, or have I drifted? And I know we are living in a time when the religious zealots of the left would like to make us believe that there is no redemption, that there is no way to change, that if you can find an iota of evidence to say that a person is X, then they are always X and will always be X and need to be roundly condemned and vilified and canceled if we find any evidence that it is X. Of interest, on that note, we're finally getting around now to some interesting things like the eugenics of attitude, the eugenic attitudes of the founder of Planned Parenthood, and some would say racist eugenic attitudes, and how Planned Parenthood now is in the crux of trying to decide how they respond to this, that their founder was, you know, had some quite strong things to say about who should be able to reproduce. Lots of interesting things there. But in the process of this week, and specifically a couple of things, hearing more about Robin DiAngelo's personal experiences as people relate what they've read in her book, White Fragility, hearing more about that, having a friend who I came across their Facebook feed and saw that they were holding blogs on systemic racism, understanding that there are many good people who have just wholeheartedly embraced this idea of systemic racism. I have talked in weeks past about the roots, as I near as I can tell from what I've listened to, the roots of things like systemic racism. I have talked in the past about the fact that we have to understand that this was honed and promulgated and promoted by by consultants, and that you have to understand that the goal of a consultant is to keep having you come back. And so they tend to design things that don't have long-lasting answers. Oh, that's my paint. And unless I am misunderstood on that point, let me just say it may or may not be that consultants intentionally design things that do not have answers, but the fact is we all work to our own benefit, whether we recognize it or not. And in working to our own benefit, we can often make decisions. We can often make decisions that are not necessarily for the best benefit of others, but are for the best benefit of ourselves. I'm looking outside. I don't see much wind. I think we're pretty good. I just got my mail. I think I'm just gonna roll down the vinsters, listen to the birds a little bit, and I don't, yeah, there's not much wind, so I think we'll be okay here. So I recognize that that happens. I, as a consultant, have had to be careful that I don't find myself swept into those types of attitudes. Had to be careful to constantly remind myself, you're working yourself out of a job, document everything, pass along as much knowledge as you can. Don't bury stuff. Make sure that somebody knows what you're doing, whether they actually remember it or not. At least make an effort to try to spread the knowledge so that others around you get stronger. But it's very easy. It's very easy. And I know I've said in the past that a lot of this systemic racism, this building up of things like white fragility, have come from consultants who are simply trying to ensure that they have a job. But I can't say, obviously, that anyone is doing that intentionally. So for the sake of optimism and for the sake of kindness, I've been thinking about systemic racism, and I've been thinking about what is it that people find so enthralling? Not enthralling is the wrong word. So attractive, so convincing about the idea of systemic racism. And I'm not talking about the people who see racism everywhere. I'm not talking about the people who problematize, who have been the subject of racism and do things like find unintended racism in traffic signals, which we talked about. I'm talking about the people, the liberal white females, you know, the people of good conscience and good heart, like some friends that I have, who suddenly are embracing this idea of systemic racism. What is it that is there that is constituting an idea that resonates with them as being true? And in looking at it from that perspective, I think what's going on here is that from what I've been told about Robin DiAngelo's book, White Fragility, that she struggles and confesses in the book about her experiences in race and her attitudes towards race and how those led her then to this belief that she has created. And it is a belief. It's a belief system. There's no question about that. And it has its share of zealots, and that's why we're going through inquisitions and witch hunts and, you know, crusades. So there is something she's sensing. And the interpretation of that is white fragility or systemic racism. So the question is, what is she sensing? What is the root of what she would call systemic racism? And I've talked about this a little bit, but I think one of the ways that we should respond to this is to say, yes, absolutely, there is systemic racism. There is no question that we as human beings look at others who are not like us with suspicion. Now, I think one of the things that fundamentally the brand of systemic racism gets wrong is in the way that it portrays our lives and makes a point of saying there's only one direction that systemic racism goes. It only goes from whiteness against people of color. And I think that then begins the essence of the fallacy. Because one way to look at this is to say, okay, yes, absolutely, I believe in systemic racism. And I believe in systemic racism, not just from white to black, but from black to white, and from black to black, and from Latino to African American, and from Asian to white, and white to Asian. And I mean, systemic racism, if you are going to go at it from the idea of categorizing and stigmatizing and stereotyping people simply by the color of their skin, absolutely, it's systemic. It is everywhere. But if you're going to make that claim, then you really need to honestly say that, yes, I believe as well in systemic misogyny. Because there is ample evidence and ample historic precedent for men treating women terribly for thousands and thousands and thousands of years. And there is ample evidence just looking around at the differences between how men treat each other, how women treat each other, how men treat women, how women treat men. So there's not only systemic misogyny, but what is the other term? Systemic misandrogy, something. And as long as you're that far down the road, then you really just need to go all the way and say that, yes, I believe in systemic sexual immorality. I believe in systemic impurity. I believe in its systemic sensuality and systemic idolatry and systemic sorcery, in systemic enmity, in systemic strife. I believe in systemic jealousy and systemic fits of anger and systemic rivalries and systemic dissensions and systemic divisions and systemic envy and systemic drunkenness and systemic orgies. Because all of those things are systemic. We are shot through and through with destruction. And the only mistake I think we make when we say systemic racism exists is if we try to confine it to whiteness versus people of color. Because you don't have to spend any time looking around where you see that that's just not true. And once you go to this step of saying it's not just whiteness against people of color, it is shot through whatever your background is, whatever your skin tone is, you find people of a different enough skin tone and you're going to see them as other, and then the flesh is going to take that and twist that in some way. And then once you're there, then you really just need to apply it out to all the works of the flesh, because that's really what this is. It's just flesh, and it's down there. It's absolutely down there. And it's working all the time. And this is what the inherent bias test gauge. Without a doubt, inherent bias, those tests that you take to show your inherent bias, okay, yes, they work at the millisecond level because that's where the flesh is firing off. They don't work when you extend the time up to a couple of seconds, because the flesh is going to be constantly going, you know, down at the bottom. But then it is our ability to not react immediately to that, but pause, think about it a moment, react in a better way than that. That's the thing that makes us human. And it's like I was telling a friend last week or week before last, you know, he was talking about, well, you know, that he did believe that there was, you know, some kind of systemic racism. And I said, yeah, absolutely. I said, it's called the flesh. And I said, the flesh is the same thing that when a pretty girl walks by, men in general, on average, go, oh, pretty girl. You know, I mean, there's that same urge to not see her as a human being, but as see her as a tool to assist the man with managing, you know, his sperm count. But
although there you could call that systemic misogyny, I don't think we should judge ourselves on the basis of subsystems that are firing and reacting at a very deep base level when we have a cognitive center whose job it is to evaluate that and say, yeah, nope, I'm not going to get into a fist fight with that guy. I'm not going to pull a knife on him. I'm not going to run after that woman and tackle her and rape her. I'm not going to do that. I know those subsystems are firing off down there, and they will fire off in a very systemic way because these are basic subsystems that were designed to keep us safe and to propagate the species, and there's nothing wrong with them. The problem is when the flesh twists them, and then we feed into that twisting to the place that it takes over our lives, and we actually act. And that's really kind of the difference between what we have traditionally called racism and now this new breed of systemic racism. What traditional racism was trying to point out is that you are acting in a racist way. You should stop that and learn to act better. What systemic racism is doing is identifying these deep instinctual systems and then claiming that you are those systems and that there's nothing you can ever do to be anything but those systems. And as I've said in the past, it's a terrible religion because there is no redemption whatsoever in it. So, from that perspective, do I believe in systemic racism? Yes, I do. Just like I believe in all the other things that I listed off, like systemic strife and systemic anger and systemic misogyny. But the glory of being a human being is that even though those thoughts may run through our heads, we don't have to act on them. Because even those who do not name the name of Christ can exercise control over those things if they choose to. Now, if they have fed into that all their life, if they have purposefully acted in ways that increase the level of the flesh's influence within them, if they impair themselves by getting drunk or doing drugs or watching enormous amounts of porn, then yes, people can get to the point where they can no longer resist without extreme effort against the flesh's twisting of those basic subsystems. But simply because we all, as humans, struggle with these things is not an excuse to point fingers at others and then condemn them. Or to distort it to the point where we say, no, it's impossible for a person of color to be racist. You have to be white to be racist. I mean, that's where everything just completely goes off the rails. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.